Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier. He'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
Lamb has the fire!
Oh! Oh! Right there! Oh! Some frequent flyer miles!
All right, welcome in, everyone, to another Buzz Beat. This episode is brought to you by our partners, Bet Online. Visit betonline.ag and enter the code BLUEWIRE to receive your 100% off welcome bonus. By supporting them, you are supporting this podcast. BG, it's going to be me and you again this week. Another episode, another week of no basketball, and another week of talking about draft prospects, not knowing when this draft is going to be. So get me excited about this one, BG.
Well, we're going international. We're going to study abroad on this week's episode. So that's kind of cool, right? That's a little exciting, I feel like. Yeah, it's a bummer not to have live basketball. It's crazy to think we'd have a season left, like the NBA, or we'd have like a week left, like the NCAA championship game would have been this week, this Monday. And that being the rearview mirror, and we would have, you know, a week or so left in the NBA regular season and playoff games around the corner. And I mean, there were set to be some really enticing first round matchups this year, both out west and in the east. And yeah, to not have that is a pretty considerable bummer. But I'm safe, healthy, and you guys appear the same, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's both depressing and fascinating to kind of look back on what we should have had this month and haven't had, and kind of imagine how life has continued without it. This is also Masters week, which is always a big week for me. So, yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. But we have found a way to continue forward with the content. And as Brian said, we're going to discuss some international prospects today. RJ Hampton, LaMelo Ball, and Killian Hayes. And this will be fun too, because these are all guys that will functionally, I think, play the same position on the next level. So it'll be fun to kind of compare and contrast. So BG, let's start with Hampton, RJ Hampton. He's 19 years old. This is one of the players that I don't know if he'd committed to play somewhere. BG, you might know that, but he decided, I'm not going to college. I'm going overseas to New Zealand to be specific, to play a year of professional before the NBA draft. Did he commit anywhere, BG?
I want to say he committed to Kansas or Memphis. But okay, then, he did not. No, he did not. He did not. He ended up not committing. I remember that. I followed his recruitment a little bit just because Duke was, for part of it, in the running. And then when Trey Jones decided to come back, that was around the same time when Hampton was sort of weighing other decisions for him.
Got it. So I did a few Sundays ago, kind of dug in on Hampton and did a little mini film dive, if you will, on Twitter. I mean, this is a guy who I can't imagine there's a better, more explosive slasher. I mean, he's an incredible athlete. You watch him in transition and even in the half court, you know, when he gets ahead of steam, and there's, I'm not comparing him to Russell Westbrook, but there's just like shades of this explosive guard that is hell-bent on getting to the rim kind of style that reminds you of a guy like Westbrook. So I think there's a lot of upside here. I think my quick takeaway with Hampton is, wow, really high ceiling because of how explosive of an athlete he is at 6'5". But at the same time, his feel for the game, how he gets his teammates involved, you know, really not sure what position he's going to play. I think if he can play point guard on the next level and be a dominant on the ball guard, he's got a chance. But it also makes the floor pretty low for him just because – not a great shooter, don't quite know what position he plays yet, and really, really depends on his athleticism for a lot of what he does on the court, BG.
Yeah, I mean, he's a combo guard, right? And it feels like at this point, it's just easier to see Hampton more as like a second side, a secondary pick and roll creator or second side attack weapon. I mean, his passing's gotten better, and he does on occasion have some just really nice kick out passes to the opposite wing, opposite corner off of a live dribble. But he's not like Ball and Hayes in terms of, you know, spread the court out, you know, run him, give him a ball screen. And even though at their very young age, those guys can perhaps go out and get you a shot. Hampton, it doesn't feel like that quite yet. He is obviously a ridiculous athlete. I think in transition, you see it most frequently on both ends. The chase down blocks, the little like touch passes he gets when he's sort of taken off as a receiver down the court, he's able to track it back to a trailing teammate. He's an interesting player of these guys. You know, he sort of seems like he's the one most likely to be in the Hornets' range. So, you know, our ears and eyes should be up for him as a potential prospect, and a guy that, you know, could you see him fitting next to Devontae Graham going forward? I think he has it in him, in his like his outermost limit, to be a guy that could be a point of attack defender. But right now, like, it's just not there for a couple of different reasons. Not always in a stance, caught upright a lot. I don't think his instincts as a team defender nor as a one-on-one defender are great. At this point, I'm just not sure how versatile he is either, despite, as far as like a switch defender, despite the crazy athleticism that he has. And the shooting numbers, below 30% on threes this year, but shot a decent number from the free throw line, you know, relatively small sample. But overall, not a great shooter, 47%, at least at this point, 47% effective shooting this year for Hampton, playing for the Breakers down in New Zealand.
Yeah, I the one thing he has that these other two prospects we're going to talk about don't is just his ability to go by his defender rather consistently, regularly. And so that, you know, his lack of playmaking out of the pick and roll, or, you know, bending a defense and making the pinpoint pass to the opposite corner consistently, maybe like these other guys can do, just manipulate defenses, his ability to go by as a defender, if he can be under control doing that, he's got a chance to wreak havoc on defenses in the NBA one day. But, you know, you brought up a good point about his defense. I think that you watch him and you watch him move and you think, okay, there's an elite defender in here somewhere, wing defender. But his frame at 180 is at least what he's listed at. And he looks thin on film too. It's 6'5". He's got a really, really slight frame right now. So the only thing that he is giving you, if he's locked in, he can be a great defender. The only thing he's given you is kind of a recovery at the rim, weak side defense, coming and sliding over to get into the air where he is at his, using his strengths best and blocking shots. But yeah, I don't have like a great feel for either side of the court for RJ Hampton, you know, just yet on what he can become. So I think that, you know, his athleticism is probably gets him into the lottery. I don't think he could really get out of that, out of past pick 14, if you will. But I don't know. I don't know where he fits on the Hornets roster, especially currently with Rozier in there too, at least for two more seasons. I think he could be potentially a good fit next to Devontae Graham, but I don't know if Hampton's the kind of guy, you know, that fits on this roster as currently constructed.
Yeah, I think, again, best case scenario for him, he is a guy that could function in a pick and roll offense, right? Maybe not as the A1 guy, but if Devontae's there, again, this, we're speaking just in a vacuum with Charlotte, then maybe that's less of an issue. He is really quick, like you said, and that's, you know, for right now, that's going to be his sort of like defining characteristic as a prospect, is that he's just fast to his speed. But something else that I would say too is, with these guys that drive, if you're thinking of Hampton as like a speed driver to the hoop, a guy that could attack a closeout or whatever, assuming it could be forced, he's, you know, he's really dominant with his right hand, right? And this is probably something that we'll talk about with Killian Hayes, but with his left hand, I worry about right now the lack of skill and with the left hand, and the over reliance on the right hand as well too, as far as how he works as like a change of direction player and a guy that can go get his own shot.
Yeah, and to that point too, you know, he's very right hand dominant. He is very focused on getting to the rim. He doesn't get to the free throw. For a slasher, for a guy that attacks the rim a lot, he doesn't get to the free throw line at a very high rate, which is another concern. You know, the one thing too, going back to the defensive side that worries me at 6'5", 180, he looks like a two position defender at most right now. I think these other two players we're going to talk about could guard three positions, which if you take a micro, you know, if you look at that microscopically, you know, with DG and Terry Rozier, where I think Ball and probably Killian Hayes could play on the floor with those two, just in this small example, where I think RJ Hampton could not. And that, I think eventually when you start comparing him to these other guards in the draft, is going to drive his value down.
Yeah.
But that remains to be seen. Anything else on Hampton, BG?
Just a couple other quick numbers we can reel off real quickly. You know, he's 19. He turned 19 in February, so still, you know, still pretty young. Not, he is of these three guys of Ball and Hayes and Hampton, he's the oldest by a couple of months, actually. But a few of his numbers from this season playing for the Breakers down in New Zealand: 17 games, 51% true shooting, 47% effective shooting, 18% assist rate, close to 3% steal rate, 22% usage. So there you go. You can sort of see that the steal rate number is, that's nice. And the assist number, you know, again, he's not the, at this point, sort of even Hayes in Germany and Ball also in Australia, they were, you know, sort of the chief operating guards for their roster. And I think those numbers are reflected in their usage and in their assist rates.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with LaMelo Ball. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on. Or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack. All open 24 hours a day and all online, including their $750,000 poker series.
If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit their website and join today to receive a 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. Bet online, your online wagering experts.
All right, let's jump in and talk a little bit of LaMelo Ball. Always a gravitational pull one way or another when you're talking about a Ball. LaMelo in the news recently, actually, goes in with his agent and purchases his team in the – is this team in the Australian League or the New Zealand League, BG? Do you know for sure? I think they're in the New Zealand League as well, right?
Well, I believe the NBL is – yeah, the NBL is, combines teams from both countries, and I guess one is also a continent too. But, yeah, the NBL is composed of New Zealand and Australian teams.
Gotcha. Probably should have known that. So he went in with his agent and bought – I'm not going to try to pronounce the name of the team, but he actually purchased that team. So another Ball in the news for something that's groundbreaking and revolutionary. And, God, if we all just had the brains that this family does. I mean,
big baller, baby. Big baller. I mean,
it's unbelievable. God, just blazing the trail one day at a time. So LaMelo Ball, 6'7", 190 pounds. He's the youngest of these three. He'll be – When the draft actually happens, he'll probably be 19 years old, but he would be 18.8 years old if the draft happened on time. To be honest with you, when I watch him play, he reminds me a lot of his brother Lonzo. I mean, I know that's convenient, but he reminds me a lot of his brother, as in pretty electric in transition. Sometimes it feels like he's got eyes in the back of his head, great vision, setting up his teammates. You know, he's a good pick and roll player. Has a little bit of zip to go by as, you know, initial defender. And if he does that, he's eight times out of 10 going to make the right pass. But he has that just like his brother, you know, he takes a lot of outside shots and makes very few of them. Lonzo certainly has gotten better in this realm. But LaMelo is taking, let's see, per game right now, he's chucking almost 7 threes per game at a 25% clip. So, you know, that kind of stuff always bothers me because there's just not a lot of self-awareness there, BG.
Yeah, do you remember in the early part of the 2018-2019 NBA season, since Trae Young's rookie year, Lloyd Pierce's first season as the Atlanta head coach? And you can see why Atlanta went about it at this way, because Trae Young was an all-star this season. He's a very good offensive guard at a young age. But it just the shot selection of the pull-up threes, the essential, I mean, like the green light to pull up from wherever you want. If the pick and roll, if the defender goes under the screen, like shot's probably going to go up majority of the time. And yeah, like he just has that. And on top of that, he has this crazy green light with pull-up shooting. And you can see why. Like that's where the league's going. And hell, the Ball family is like, they've created this player type with Lonzo and LaMelo of where him play fast and throw crazy transition passes and chuck threes off the dribble. Like that's what they want to do. But it's not like this guy has like great shooting numbers or good form. Like his mechanics are kind of a hot mess. It'd be funny if you could get the like the truth serum response to the teammates in Australia, you know, guys like Aaron Brooks or Josh Boone that are, you know, grinding for another contract or David Anderson or whomever that are, you know, guys that have been playing professional basketball for 15, 20 years or whatever, just how they feel about letting the 18-year-old come in and, you know, brick 75% of his threes while taking damn near 7 of them a game. LaMelo does do some stuff in transition that's super duper exciting, right? Like the other week I was singing the praises of Tyrese Halliburton as a transition passer. And obviously I've been writing about this for 2 years now, but Trae Jones, a really good transition passer with these hit ahead passes. LaMelo has that too, but it's like he dials the risk up even higher, you know, like, I mean, just these crazy one-handed outlet passes. And when he completes them, it looks awesome. I think similar to Hayes, you know, guys are going to really like playing with him in transition. If he can hit his middle outcome or better and be an impactful NBA player, he's going to make it easy for some guys in transition to get catch and shoot threes, spot up threes, dunks, layups, like all the money shots on the court. And he has some upside as a pick and roll passer. Like he's big, he's got good size, he can see over defenders. And even then, I still think his handle is good, and he's good in a crowd with the ability to make reads and keep a live dribble going and pass off of that.
Yeah, I mean, his feel for the game when he gets going downhill or the pick and roll, I mean, it's good and it's above average, and he is going to. You know, some guys are going to play with him and be like, this is great. I'm getting open shots. I don't have to do a lot. I just got to keep my floor spacing and move while the ball moves. I wonder, and this is what you were getting at, BG. I just wonder, a guy like him, how much does he actually help you win basketball games?
Defensively right now, maybe not many of them.
Right. Defensively, not many. He's going to need the ball. Like, what is he doing when he doesn't have the basketball? Probably not much. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? It's just one of these guys that needs so much usage. But what is the return of that usage? Not, you know, not a crazy turnover rate. I think that's, you know, I think that's a good thing. He definitely sets up teammates, as we've talked about. He's a pretty good rebounder. Actually, really good rebounder, I think, actually, for his position, if you consider him a point guard.
22% defensive rebound rate. It's pretty good this year.
Pretty good. You wonder what that looks like in the NBA.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not the Australian League. I'm sure he can go in there and mix it up a little bit more consistently in that league than he would the NBA. But I just, you know, this guy's going to be high usage. You know, he's going to take a bunch of bad shots. He's not going to give you much defensively. I'm not confident this is a winning basketball player. In fact, I'm pretty confident he's not a winning basketball player, which is why I would want nothing to do with him if I was in the top three picks in the NBA draft. And inevitably in this draft, with very little feedback and data, with everything that's going on right now, he's going to get picked in the top three. And my prediction would be that team's going to be disappointed.
We'll see. Again, the defensively, he's a mess right now. Off ball, he just straight up will quit on some plays. Lacks attention to detail. Lacks discipline. Gambles for steals a lot. I mean, his steal numbers are decent, 2.5% steal rate this year. But yeah, he gambles, and at times, he makes these. He makes these really nice reads, looking to sort of like poach steals in the backcourt or in transition. But he can get burnt and put his teammates in a bad spot. So giveth and taketh with making lives easier for teammates and more complicated at times too. Not great sticking to his assignment. Ball screen defense, getting caught on screens. I mean, that happens to a lot of young guards too. But Lonzo was such a good defensive prospect. At least, I don't know about Lonzo's time in high school, but from UCLA on, a good defender. And, LaMelo has, I think, pretty quick hands. He's long. He's got a good frame. It's like, and he, in theory, should be able to be a guy that could guard three positions in the NBA, but that's not unless like a light really comes on with him. And if that doesn't happen or only gets close to halfway happening, then offensively he's got to be special. And I think that gets one of my sort of like overarching questions with him is does LaMelo Ball become a guy that you build a team around as, he's your A1 primary creator. And if you draft him top three, that's what you're planning on. Right. Or is he a luxury? Is he a connector? Is he a transition specialist? Is he a change of pace guy? Or is he someone that you have to partner him up with someone else specific in the backcourt to only get the best parts out of him and sort of cut down on some of the excess. Yeah, it's interesting. He's a very challenging value proposition as a prospect, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I just get a sense for relative to where, the experts and most feel like he should be drafted. I don't see it. I don't see it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Anything else on LaMelo, or shall we move on to what I think is both going to be our favorite out of these three?
I'll read off a couple more stats with LaMelo. Per 36 minutes in NBL play this season, 19.5 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 1.8 steals, 3 turnovers, 4.5 free throw attempts. So, yeah, I mean, like LeVar coached them up. I mean, these guys try to fill up the stat sheet. They're going to chase steals, chase rebounds. They're going to look to push the pace and transition. There's some good and some bad from some very bad that can come from that as well too. And yeah, I don't know. I like what he offers as a passer. He's a natural slash and kick player. A guy that can read the floor. According to him, it's a very natural thing for him to be able to do. But the ability to throw pocket passes, I mean, he's a skilled pocket passer for guys on the roll or on the pops or looking for guys in the opposite shooter. And he's got pretty nice touch on the floater, though, like a lot of these other young guards too, is pretty reliant on the floater as well too, as opposed to sort of just like busting his ass and getting to the rim too. So yeah, I don't know. LaMelo Ball is an interesting prospect. I'm not totally out on him, but there's just a lot of risk because the floor is something that this guy could fall through. And for a team like Charlotte, that's dangerous in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, let's move to Killian Hayes. Here's a guard out of France, 6'4", about 215 pounds. I mean, I think he might actually be 6'5", is what he's listed at now. 215 pounds, really good frame. He is my favorite of these three guys we're going to discuss. BG, kind of a late bloomer, late onto the scenes here. He has been given a much larger role this past season overseas, and I think he's done a pretty good job overall of answering that. 27 minutes per game, about 13 points, a little over 6 assists. Not a great rebounding guard, but has some good defensive potential, an average to steal and a half this year. You know, he's young. He's just barely older than LaMelo Ball. Mm-hmm. He is left-handed, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, and he's very dependent on that left hand, but has a really good feel in the pick and roll. Averaged almost 3.5 turnovers this year, so he's learning on the fly. I think, again, he was a late bloomer, but you can tell that he has a change of pace. His footwork is pretty good. He understands where his teammates are on the floor. He understands spacing. He understands how defenses react. It's very clearly a player who's just scratching the surface, in my opinion, of what he can become. But the left hand, as you said earlier, and we can start there since it's already been mentioned, very dependent there. If he's forced to his right, which a lot of teams tried to do in the French League, he struggled against that. And he looks very, very indecisive when he has to go right, when he's forced in that direction. And that's actually where I would probably say, anecdotally, 70 or 75 to 80% of the turnovers probably come from that. Mm-hmm. So an area improvement for him, but pretty good shooter. Little bit of a push shot motion, but I like his footwork. Mm-hmm. He's good off the ball. He'll cut. He understands spacing when he's not on the ball. So he's just kind of the total package to me in terms of what I would want out of an 18 and a half year old guard that I'm going to draft, BG.
Yeah, I really like Hayes as a prospect a lot. He might be the best prospect in this class. You may not even need to qualify that with a might or a maybe. Someone more bold than I could say Killian Hayes is the best prospect in this draft. Primary creator with some serious off-ball skills, interesting two-way impact, good handle, good off-the-dribble craft, really nice shooting indicators, 88% from the free throw line this year. You know, I like to sort of break things down. People say three-level scorer a lot, and I even say that as well, too, but I kind of like the thought of a four-level score, especially with guards that are handling the ball a lot. You think the three game, either off the catch and on the pull-up. You've got the long two in the ISO and pick and roll pull-up game. There's the float game from that sort of like shorter two. You think of the way cleaning the glass sort of like divides up the offensive half court, and I like to think about that. And then the rim, Hayes shot just under 60% at the rim this season. We talked about this with Halliburton a little bit, but he has nice moves in the final third or final, you know, fourth of the court to separate. And then the thing that it reminds me of Halliburton is that ability for him at that last second or the last second and a half to be able to extend with his left arm and finish around or over, or just give himself 6 more inches or 9 more inches of room to get that ball up on the glass. And Halliburton, I think, you know, on a smaller volume, is able to sort of do that and uses his length to his advantage when he's attacking downhill and get to the rim too. But an elite passer off the live dribble. There's very real pick and roll upside, ball screen usage, 25% usage across all competition this season. Good half court engine, good transition player. Guys will, you know, want to play with him, run with him, cut hard, run, hit their assignments. And here's another thing too, 38% assist rate across all competition this season.
That's big time.
You pair that up with his shot, the ability to score from a couple different levels, and the fact that he's a pretty good defender too, with some holes, but you know, not like a, you know, he's not Pat Beverly, but a guy that should be able to come in and guard at an NBA level with some versatility. He's a really, really appealing prospect.
I think he has pretty high upside defensively, actually. I mean, he's already at 18 and a half years old. You know, he's already got 215-pound frame. That's he can only get stronger. We don't know if he's done growing yet, but I think he can guard three positions easily. I think that on the other end offensively, you talked about how dangerous he could be off the dribble, how good he is in the pick and roll, especially when he's going left using that length. That's very obvious. But put him off the ball, and he understands the game still. He doesn't stop moving. Yeah. He doesn't stand, and that's. Whenever you're talking about a young league guard, if he can do that too, if he can still operate and stay engaged off the basketball, that's a really good sign of basketball IQ.
Yeah, no doubt. He
can do that. You know, so again, I'm just going to drill it down to this small example, but imagine Killian Hayes. He could in theory, be on the floor with Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's, you know, and so it doesn't have to be Devontae Graham or Terry Rozier, but just imagine two other really good guards. You know, he can be on the floor with them. Makes him so much more dynamic on both ends. So, yeah, I really, really like this kid. And I think that I think you said it right, BG. I think he is the best prospect in this draft. I really do.
I feel very bullish on him as a prospect, and like his fit in Charlotte is like a dream fit. I think he pairs well with Graham, and he can play off ball and then eventually take the reins as the primary guy and for the long term future of the franchise. And the fact that he could, you add this guy to the roster next season, he's going to make your backcourt defense better. I think Hayes too is. He's getting better. He's young, but like his right hand's going to get stronger. His pick and roll defense is going to get better. Like he's adding skills and he's improving as a prospect too. Yeah, I think he's a dream fit in Charlotte with Graham. And I think of him as a guy with both a high floor and a high ceiling, a guy that could be an all-star guard and score lots of points and, you know, you build a top 10 offense around this guy being a high usage, high assist rate guy for your team. And on the other end of the court too, team defense, good with his assignments, his wingspan can be really impactful at times. 3% steal rate across all competitions this season, which is a pretty good number. I think he can get taken off the dribble by faster, twitchier guys. And so maybe that's one of the little like restrictors I have on him as a defender, but like the other stuff that's more important, his engagement, his team defense, his basketball IQ, like he checks all those boxes in my opinion. I think that's what really matters too. His stats from the Euro Cup this year are nuts as well. 39% shooting on threes, over 4 3-point attempts per game, 45%. Assist rate, which is just a monster number, 25% usage, 58% true shooting, 3% steal rate. He has a little step back twirl to his game too. That's one of the things he can kind of get to when, if you do shade him right, you can sort of try to work that step back a little bit. But yeah, that's all of that add to the package of what I think is a really appealing offensive prospect.
Agree with you. I think I was reading his weight wrong, so forgive me, but I think the point kind of stands here. You know, he does have a good frame for his age and his height too, but you know, I agree with you. What I like about that steal rate too the most, BG, is he gambles the wrong word, but he takes risk and under control. He stays in that passing lane. He doesn't completely overrun it. He really uses his wingspan, not his feet, to gamble for steals. You know, opposed to a guy like Melo, who just completely takes himself out of the play when he doesn't get to steal. You know, so he's an under control basketball player. You can tell he's a good kid if you watch some of the interviews out there online, and you can also tell he's going to be extremely coachable. I think. I mean, that's at least my feel, and I think that makes him even more of an attractive prospect.
18 and a half years old too, and I believe if you count up the two seasons of pro ball in France, the season of pro ball in Germany with Ulm, I believe over 100 games of professional experience already underneath his belt for a guy that is very young. Again, just small stuff that adds to a really enticing prospect.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I think the ceiling is very high for him. I mean, it's not like 10-time all-star high, I don't think, for Killian, but I think it's up there. But his floor, it's kind of – I think it's pretty clear to see that he's going to be a successful NBA basketball player. I mean, by the time he's 21, there's really no doubt in my mind he'll be a starting point guard in the NBA. And so in a draft full of we don't knows, I think he's a great, great value proposition.
I do too. Like I think the comp with D'Angelo Russell is like a little trite. We always like to compare lefties to lefties, guys to white guys or whatever. These are the when people want to comp, these are some of the foundational elements that that people will fall on. But, you know, D'Angelo Russell with some defense, with some real zest defensively, and it looks like Hayes has it in him to be a serious two-way impact player. Yeah, that's a really appealing guy to add to your roster, no doubt.
Yeah, I agree. It is an easy comparison, but you can see shades of D'Angelo, especially in like his pull-up game that he's improved. Right.
The floater game.
Yeah, the floater game, exactly. You can see where they come from, but I like it. Add a little layer of defense in there. So we're going to move to – we got one question. Oh, no. Before we get to that. So I think we've answered this, but BG, if you're a GM of these three, which one are you taking?
Hayes, definitely. Yeah. I like all three to varying degrees, but Hayes is arguably the best prospect in the draft and has a chance to be the best player to come out of it as well, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Hayes. I would, as much as it probably sounds like I have an extreme distaste for LaMelo Ball, I would still rank him second above Hampton. I just think that there's a universe in where Hampton and Ball are in the league, you know, after their rookie contracts. I think that is a possible, yeah, that's a possibility for them. I don't see that in any universe for Killian Hayes, so I would definitely draft him if I were picking between these three. All right, let's get to a listener question. This comes from Fifth Factor, who's in on our Slack channel. So if you're not on that, make sure that you do that. I should have gotten instructions from Richie about how to plug that. Or how, Richie, how you're on here. Why don't you just jump in real quick and tell us, how do people get in our Slack channel?
Yeah, so if you go to our BuzzBeat Twitter handle and you send us your review on iTunes, we'll send you a link, an invitation, and you can join our conversation on Slack.
Perfect. One of these days, we're going to make Richie jump in here and talk about draft prospects, even if he doesn't want to. So listeners out there, if you're missing Richie, give him a hard time. Tell him he's got to come in here and kick the can with us on draft prospects. But no, I should have figured that out before we started recording. All right. So Fifth Factor on our Slack channel asked us, wondering if anyone has additional thoughts on the decision between chasing upside and a better sure thing prospect. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past. I'm going to throw this to you first, BG. We talked about it with Nate Duncan when he came on the pod, and he thinks that Charlotte is very clearly in a position to swing for the fences, if you will. I don't know if you and I stand in the same place, but I also think we think a little higher of what Charlotte has in the pipeline right now in terms of prospects on the roster. Where do you stand on draft strategy?
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about this before, like I'm always best player available. Now, within the context of that, you can go in different ways. This sort of, it's not all black and white, but if you want to go the safe pick, the higher floor versus the more, the riskier pick that has you think may have a greater upside. I just think for a lot of people, it's really easy to critique drafting strategies after the fact, as if this is like an exact science, and that, you know, the teams approach the draft as being like every outcome is a certainty based off whatever prospect you're going to go for, especially if you're critiquing that over a franchise with multiple decision makers. I think that gets really, that's not a fair way to evaluate a franchise, even if, there it is deserving of some sort of critique as well too, but no, I think it's okay to go, especially in this year's draft where there, you know, there's no Luka, there's no Zion, where there's a little more the ceiling isn't as high overall with this class. It's not as good, and I think if that's the case, like it's all right to go out and just try to get you a guy that can be a starter, be a rotation player. You can say that's risk averse. You can say that's as opposed to swinging for the fences, you're just trying to get on base, maybe. But there are a lot of smart ways to get on base in baseball, right? It's not like you're just trying to bunt. You can walk. You know, there are smart ways for you to get on base and find ways to be productive if you want to draw the analogy out a little bit. So, but just because that reality exists, that doesn't mean you have to just chase bad money too. with these cranks of the slot machine either too. Like, it's still okay to go out and add value to your roster by finding guys that maybe have less upside, but you feel strongly about their ability to contribute to winning basketball.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think that Charlotte is in an okay position. Let me back up. I think that relative to where we thought Charlotte would be at this point in time, once Kemba Walker left for, you know, basically nothing, depending on what you think about Terry Rozier and that sign and trade situation, relative to where we thought they'd be, I would say that it's better than most people thought. And I don't even know if that's debatable. Like, who would have thought Devontae Graham was going to have this year? Who would have thought that Jalen McDaniels was going to show Spurs? Who would have thought that P.J. Washington was going to be?
Cody Martin, too.
Cody Martin. I mean, yes. I mean, it feels like, if we're going to stick with the bad baseball analogy, BG, that we keep using every episode, it feels like we've hit quite a few singles. So at some point, you're going to have somebody in scoring position. And why don't you just keep the ball in play? I mean, why don't you keep me moving the needle in the correct direction? Whether that means any of these players are going to start for Charlotte in a playoff series one day or contribute for the Hornets in a playoff series, I think it's okay for them to just become real assets that can be used in other ways too. That's something that not enough people talk about with this team. Developing young players means a few things. It means that they can be traded for better pieces or more pieces down the road. It means that you're doing something right. There's equity within the industry that you're developing young pieces, which I think makes a difference in free agency at some point. But nobody tries to measure or look at those things that are almost impossible to measure. And I think Charlotte did a really nice job in year one of getting some of those things right.
And let's also understand that I don't think anyone listening to this podcast or people that really, follow the Hornets and care about the Hornets, either they cover the roster, they're fans, or there's some hybrid of the two or whatever. Like, and not to put words in someone's mouth that's criticizing or critiquing the franchise, but it's like, drafting PJ Washington is not the same thing as drafting Frank Kaminsky, right? Like, those are two very different things. So that's not apples to apples. Those are two very, very different picks. Even if you look at PJ Washington and say, like, well, he seems like a rotation player, but where's the upside, whatever, that is still different than watching a guy like Frank Kaminsky get hot in March. And despite the fact that you don't think there's any like realistic way towards him becoming a defensive five that can stay on the court, or a defensive four or whatever that can stay on the court, again, just totally different worlds comparing PJ to something like Frank Kaminsky. Again, just sort of cherry picking two examples from the fairly recent past for the Hornets in terms of drafting guys late in the lottery.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, PG. And the other point I want to make, there was a national basketball podcast, I think it was last week, that was done, and they were talking about the Hornets for a minute. I of course won't name which one that was, but I would just, the Hornets have been placed into this box, and I'm the last person that would ever say I have supreme confidence in Michael Jordan and Mitch Kupchak. That's far from the truth. I don't. Okay, I'm probably somewhere down the middle at some point, and that's been confidence growth in the right direction in my part. So, but if you don't watch the team, then save some of your negative thoughts about past years and a past regime. And stop placing small market teams in boxes. That stuff really annoys me. And there was a prominent podcast last week with a good guest who I respect, who very clearly doesn't watch the Hornets, and decided because they've sucked in the past years, and because they haven't developed young talent in past years, because they've swung and missed on some draft picks in the past years, well, it must be the same now. Well, that's lazy, and that's not reporting. And at some point, even frustrated small market fans are going to stick up for their small market teams when that is what is doled out to the national audience.
It's also just like, if you stop paying attention to this franchise after Kemba left, then you've missed some good stuff that they did. Period. They didn't make any hasty trades, that some young guys have been better than expected this season. There's a culture. A big part of that culture is player development. PJ Washington looked to be a really nice pick for big chunks of the season. You've hit on a couple second round picks. This is the kind of stuff that when teams that have a tradition of winning consistently and excellence, you say, oh, these are the small things that that this franchise on the margins, they knock the stuff out of the park every year. And I get that the context is different for a franchise like Charlotte that has really struggled over the last decade, but that doesn't mean the stuff isn't still smart. Like, they've done some good, again, they've done the way we talked about it plenty last summer. What happened with Kemba, the exit, it was not handled very gracefully, nor was it very dynamic in terms of the last 18 months of his tenure in Charlotte. There were some very real missed opportunities. But if you want to look back at the last couple of drafts, the way they've navigated the trade deadline, player development, the way the guys are clearly were bought in and buying into Borrego, they outperformed their point differential this season too. You know, I think that's stuff that if you're really locked in and paying attention to the team, that you realize there's value in that, as opposed to falling back on the crutch of what you could critique the franchise for over the last 10 plus seasons.
I agree, and we can kind of phase out on this thought. I've thought about this a little recently with this idea for the NBA is, hey, can we get all these teams in one area of Vegas or wherever it is, you know, and play this tournament and complete some kind of season here? If there was an article written, BG, on like, hey, here, you know, almost like the NCAA tournament, like, here are the 12 seeds you should be a little bit afraid of, right? Like, I think, seriously, like, I kind of picture Charlotte as whatever seed they'd be, 24, 25, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, being one of those teams that I would write about, being like, you know, they've had some spots this season. Like, if you get them in a one-game situation, here's a young, feisty team that could jump up and bite you. Like, so maybe we'll have an opportunity, or someone will, to talk about that in that realm. Mm-hmm. But I just have thought about that in the momentum that they've built this year in relation to this tournament that we might see. So we can end on that. But
I think I kind of agree with you. It's like you know, Devontae Graham is not without his warts as a player. I mean, he can't score at the rim. His mid-range game wasn't very good this season defensively, bit of a lost puppy. But his ability to get hot from above the break and like function as a strong pick and roll decision maker in the half court, or as a transition passer for that matter too. It's like in a small sample, you know, one game, three game sample, three game series, whatever. It's like, yeah, it's a guy that can score 40 plus points and do it efficiently too. You know what I mean? So yeah, that adds I think a little bit of bite to the teeth for Charlotte in this hypothetical that we're referring to here.
No doubt. All right, good stuff. That was a good ending there. Turning the clocks back and getting emotional about the Hornets that we missed so badly.
What I would give to watch this team play just some middle of the road, you know, a 7-point win over the Bulls in February or something like that. I would love to watch that right now, seriously.
I think you could run my credit card for $50 to watch them play like a G League team in the Greensboro. Yeah. Like to watch Greensboro scrimmage Charlotte right now. Yeah. You could almost charge me anything.
I would do. I'm with you.
Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff. Thanks for tuning in to another BuzzBeat. If you didn't get the opportunity to listen to our podcast from Monday, it was an awesome one. Richie released one recapping the 2000-2001 season with the Charlotte Hornets. So check that one out. It is definitely worth a listen. And Richie's way more creative than I think me and BG are. So BG and I are just like, well, let's just talk draft prospects until we don't have any more to talk. And Richie's like, no, I got all these great ideas. Just hang with me. So more good stuff to come. We'll continue the content coming even in the absence of basketball. So for BG, I'm Spencer. We'll see you next time.